Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Welcome to On Driven on Joy 94.9 with your hosts Alan and Hugh. On tonight's programme, we will chat to Jeffrey about his work helping overseas students in Melbourne. We'll also talk about him travelling overseas at his own expense to help to educate people on HIV prevention and other related issues. Once again, we have another great discussion coming up tonight here on Orange Ribbon, so please stay with us for the next hour here on Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9, this is Orange Ribbon with Alan and Hugh. Welcome, Alan.
Hello, Hugh. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
I'm sweating today. I don't know whether...
It's been quite warm.
I was
today.
Working at home this afternoon. I actually had the air conditioning switched on this afternoon. Can you believe that?
I went for a walk at lunchtime and it was quite warm. Now, I just want to mention, we've just been listening to The Dinner Party and by Kaz Mitchell. And Kaz Mitchell,
she's
as everyone
such a familiar
knows.
Person.
Oh, she is. She's a Joy presenter, the Women's Zone on Saturday 3 to 5. So she's one of our own. So excellent tracks. So well done, Kaz. Now, tonight, our guest is Jeffrey. Jeffrey, welcome to Orange Ribbon.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Just to take us into the show, give us a little bit about where you come from, Jeffrey.
Well, basically, I was a Western suburbs boy, pretty much brought up in evangelical Christianity, and we lived in the Western suburbs, worked in the Western suburbs, and ultimately became involved in developing enterprise, commercial enterprise in,
okay.
in the West.
So, when you say the Western suburbs, which suburb were you born in?
Well, I was born not far from here in the Queen Vic Hospital in Lonsdale Street, but I went back to Pitt Street in West Footscray and lived there until Spotswood, where I was educated in grade two after my dad sold the family home and bought a farm in Gippsland, ostensibly because it was a post-war era when people needed building permits and building materials to start businesses after the war. And it was one of those situations where... you needed to have a built material to get a permit, and you need to have a permit to get material. And so the quickest way to do that was to buy a farm, pull all the building materials out of it, bring it back to Melbourne, photograph it, and then get the building permit. And that was the start of a business in 1950.
It's interesting you say that, because my father went through something very similar to that, because he bought a block of land in Kilmore, of all places, just after the war, and had great trouble trying to get building materials and went through similar gymnastics to try and get the materials. Mm. You mentioned being brought up in an evangelical family. Was that from a very young childhood, or did that come into the family as you grew up?
No, I think my grandparents were pretty much Christian. I was Calathumpian, really, because I was Sunday schooled Baptist, christened Anglican, and then made some decisions for myself in the Methodist Church, which ultimately became the Uniting Church, and mm-hmm. where I subsequently became an employee.
Ah. Let's go back to your schooling. Your second school was in St. Albans.
Yeah, I was a foundation member of St. Albans High School, which in those days we had no concept of ethnicity, because there were kids, classes of 37 kids with 35 nationalities. So for us, spot the Aussie was quite a task, I guess.
And 35 nationalities.
Yeah, and we were very much surrounded by European and Mediterranean fellow students, and we learned to get along with each other, to understand the differences of the way in which we ate and the way we slept and the way we behaved and so on. It was a great time.
It's an interesting observation, because I think you and I are probably a vaguely similar generation, and I was brought up in the northeast and went to Benalla High School, and it was the exact reverse there, because we're talking about the 50s and into 60, and there it was the other way around. I think in my classes all the way through high school, I think there may have only been two or three or four people who came from other ethnicities. So, but admittedly, we're talking about the country, which is probably slightly different to suburban or outer, what would be then have been outer suburban Melbourne.
Well, they'd have passed through Benalla, because they'd have had to come down from Bonegilla.
From Bonegilla,
they went
exactly.
to Bonegilla to the migrant hostel, and they all came down to Ardea and settled there.
Now, one of the things you told me, Jeffrey, was that while you were at school, you got sick.
Yeah, I went to a snow trip and got pneumonia and nearly died. I came back to a chronic health problem that resulted in me being labelled as a chronic asthmatic for some time and not really able to go to work.
So how old were you then?
About 15.
Right. But what did you do? I mean, you weren't running around naked in the snow or something.
No, I was sitting behind the bus driver and he had the window open. I sat in a draft. I learned that it's not a good thing to be elevated and sitting behind a bus driver with the window open heading towards the snow.
So you left school at 15, did you?
Yeah, I was told I wasn't held well enough to go back to school. I subsequently went back and did my matric by night study, but I'd already moved on in stages of my life to... And it was at that time that I had this understanding that maybe I was a bit different to other people, because there was no knowledge about gay or homosexuality. There was nothing that I was aware of that would have explained to me the differences for me. But it's ironic how many people... were also gay around that time and didn't know.
So at 15, you're saying you realised...
Yeah, I was different, but I didn't know what it was called.
And you said there was other people around.
Yeah, well, the guy who married us was the first... ours was his first marriage after he was ordained, and I found out later that he was gay and his marriage broke up. So
was he a priest or
a
minister?
Yeah, he is a minister. Yeah, okay. He's a minister. So, you know, there was this and that, and there were a number of other things, but there were a few of us at school who were... into all sorts of contact sports that weren't registered on the sporting list. I think that's probably the best way to talk about it. And that was just fun. We didn't have a name for it. But as time went on, I came to learn that the good old tradition that if you're a Christian, God treats gay people as abominations. So I was very much into trying to figure out a way of getting better.
So you treated it like a disease?
Well, it was the medical model was almost happening. I think there was some black sheep in the family whose difference was not talked about openly. I'm sure there were relatives in our sides of the family that may have been similar. In fact, there was an experience where I went to a Christmas party and there was a girl there who wasn't identified. It was one of those Christmas parties with hundreds of people from a series of generations. And when they came to the end of the day and tried to identify this lady, she announced that she was Uncle Kevin. And Uncle Kevin had been told not to come. But Uncle Kevin came in drag. But that was the first experience of something that was different. But nobody talked about it. It was just something that nobody ever talked about.
Something that happened, but it wasn't there really.
No, it wasn't really there. And if you ignored it, it would go away.
Okay.
And then, I decided that I had to find out how it was that I could become better. And I took some professional advice, mainly from the family doctor. And he said, it's a phase you're going through. Just find a good woman and get married and everything will come right. And I took that advice and I found a very good woman who I still have a lot of affection for. And I'm a parent of three children, not all of them who've survived me, and a grandparent of four.
Okay, this is Orange Ribbon with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
When You Believe by Leon Jackson, who's a Scottish singer, just like Kaz Mitchell, who was the first track that we played. So,
is there a theme associated with his music tonight, Hugh?
Well, our guest didn't want to actually pick any music tonight, so it was left to me, and being Scottish.
I'm not complaining. It was quite pleasant.
We're not going to listen to Scottish all night, though. That's the first two tracks are Scottish. And we got a message, actually, from someone who says it sounds like karaoke music. Well, thank you very much. I love you too. But our guest tonight is Jeffrey, and let's go back to Jeffrey. And Jeffrey, we were talking about you, and we were talking about schooling and you coming out, or basically realizing that you were gay. But you worked in the family business when you couldn't go back to school, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a kind of a conscript situation, And I was conscripted to you couldn't do nothing in our house. You were either in bed asleep or you were working. That was the ethos. And our workforce was pretty much the same people we were talking about earlier, the folks who'd come down from Bonegilla who were wanting to work, and so we had a very multicultural workforce. Very, very few were English as a first language.
So what nationalities did you have?
Oh, they were mostly from the Slavic communities, so Yugoslav and Russian, and a little bit of Mediterranean, Maltese, Italian, and that kind of group of people. Very few Asians back in those days, of course, but
We had the White Australia policy to something like 82 or whenever the hell it was,
yes,
wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, the White
72,
Australia.
Was it? Forgotten. No, it was Whitlam days, wasn't it?
Yeah,
72,
yeah.
I think it was.
I thought that there was actually more Asians before Europeans.
No. Oh, there was a lot of Poms who came here on their 10 bucks.
If you go back a step or two to the Gold Rush days of the 1850s, yes, there were a lot of Chinese came here during the Gold Rush days, but then they slowly dissipated over the subsequent years as the Gold Rush died down. And so whilst there were a few Chinese families, including one who we had on a program only about 6 or 8 weeks ago, who's about a fifth generation Australian, but that's fairly uncommon. Most of the Chinese tended to die away, and then it was really only the Vietnam War aftermath.
So we had the European and Eastern European. Mm. Okay. Mm. So this was in your family business. So
That was a family business that went 7 days a week, well, 6 days a week, and we lived on the job. The house was next door to the factory. We just lived on the job.
Right.
Job
was, so the whole family worked in the family business, yeah? So at what age did you get married? Because you mentioned you got married and had children. What age were you?
Well, I was 23 and she was 21, and it was all the traditional white wedding and all the things that went with that. And we went through that process, and we had a happy life. There's no doubt about it. But there was still this lack of.
If I can ask you, Geoffrey, why did you get married?
I think because it was what everybody did. I didn't have a happy life at home. In fact, I found out from the specialists after I turned 40, which was a bit late. I'd like to have known earlier that Geoffrey would never be well while he lived under the same roof as his father. That's what all the doctors told my mother. But nobody thought to tell me that. And my mother said, what could I have done? There were no pensions and benefits in those days, so we stuck it out. Mm. But I thought if I got married and moved away, I probably would get better. And in fact, I did. After I moved out of the family home and the family environment and the toxic parent that I lived with, male parent, that I would, find a solution. And I got very much involved in youth club activity, church activities, treasurer of umpteen different groups, auditing a lot of groups around the local community.
So at this point you joined the church, didn't you?
Oh, I was part of the church, and I just moved on in it. I didn't leave. I graduated into an employed position in 1973, a position I left in 1997.
Right.
Pretty much a bit of pushing and shoving over my marrying up. I was the mission director in a parish mission, and I'd incorporated some work with the VAC and support into my work as a missioner in the Western region, and I was part of the support program. And there were some people in the church who felt that homosexuality was a punishment. That AIDS was a punishment on homosexuals and so on. So there was a little bit of homophobia and anti-gay sentiment within the parish. Not a lot, but enough to say that maybe his priorities weren't up to standard, and so there was a little bit of a nudge at that point in time.
Your wife was involved with the church?
No, she was working too. We worked together in a semi-voluntary capacity. She worked for 24 years, I worked for 30 years. And then when the push came to shove, I got offered a package, and I took it, and I left. And at that point, all the restrictions on my coming out were lifted. You can understand, I was a married man, I worked in the church, and there were a whole lot of other things. I fell in love with a guy prior to that, a South African guy, and he asked me to come and live with him, and we're still good friends, but we didn't go to live with each other simply because the cost-benefit analysis would have been too high a price.
So the 30 years you were in the church, you knew you were gay.
Yeah. And
did your wife ever suspect you?
No, it was fairly much hidden. I'd established a dual identity. I had another name. I had another Medicare card. I had another credit card in that name. I had a post office box in a nearby shopping centre. I basically had two identities.
So you had two lives?
Yeah, I had two lives. And if I got an STI, I went to South Melbourne Clinic and saw Dr. Meese, who many people would probably remember. And when I was a heterosexual man, I saw the family doctor, and I never mixed the two together. So I kind of lived that double life fairly successfully for a time.
Did your wife ever suspect you having two lives?
I guess my dress sense was probably a little bit of a giveaway. I tend to be a colourful person when I dress, so there was a sense in which people would say that the dress, the way in which I dressed myself would be a bit more inclined, but it was never discussed.
So she maybe was a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, my kids used to say to me, "Dad, if you're gay, just say it." And I'd say, "Well, if I'm gay, where did you come from?" And that would be where the conversation would end.
This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
Joy 94.9.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, this is Alan and Hugh on Orange Ribbon, a white shade of pale and the wonderful Annie Lennox. And sorry, she is Scottish.
When we were trying to think... was the original who somebody please help us out, my mind is a total blank.
Who we did can't remember who was the first recording
in the was it the early 70s, the Whitey Shade of Pale. I'm too young
Now actually we've got a few messages, and very quickly we'll go into this. Kaz and Helen said hello and they're enjoying the show, thank you very much. There's one person says, but the Scottish are good in bed, so who cares if they can't sing?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Maybe that's true, actually.
Can't speak with experience.
Jason says, what is next, the Proclaimers? No, we're not playing the Proclaimers tonight. No, I promise you.
I should point out that Hugh chose the music tonight.
Yes, I chose.
Hugh, H-U-G-H.
But, you know, well, I think it's quite good. Never mind. Anyway, let's go back to our guest, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, we're just going to move in now because you've done a lot of good work in the gay community, but not just in this country. Tell us a little bit about the AIDS conference in 2001.
Well, Melbourne hosted I've forgotten the acronym. We talk in acronyms all the time, but the AIDS conference for Asia Pacific, and we hosted the sixth one in Melbourne, and at that point in time, many of us had become quite well versed on the care and support aspect of people living with AIDS. Treatment wasn't a problem for us because we had Medicare, we had medicine, and we had a whole lot of other things. But there were lots of delegates at the conference, and when we were in small groups together, I discovered that most of the high prevalence countries were about 5 years behind in the knowledge that they needed. And we had that knowledge, and when we were sharing in small groups, I said, how is it that the people who come to conferences don't share this information with you when they go back home? And they said, they don't tell us anything. And how are we going to know unless someone tells us? And they said, we heard that you just got made redundant from your job, so why don't you come? And I thought the idea of living in India with no cutlery and no toilet paper was not really my idea of fun. The invitation was there, and the faces of the people who were inviting me and the hospitality that I was being promised, I decided that since I didn't have anything else planned apart from propagating pelargoniums, which was not all that exciting, I'd have a go. So I went to India in 2001 and stayed for 6 months, and then I went again in 2002 and then again in 2003 and 4 and 5, and started writing extensively on the internet. And from that there was a...
Can I just say at this point, though, sorry to interrupt you, Jeffrey, but you funded this yourself, didn't you?
Well, yes, I had an inheritance. That father of mine had died, and with a lot of effort, we managed to fix the will up, so I got some money out of it, and I funded myself to go, yeah.
So you weren't paid?
But it was cheaper to live in India than it was to live here.
Mm. But no one ever paid you any money
No, no. I didn't need any, and I enjoyed the experience. It was a life-changing experience that I don't think anyone could imagine what that kind of a life change can do to somebody. But I was a monolingual person. I only spoke English, and I went to a country. India has 29 different languages and four main languages that you need to be able to speak. And yet I managed to get around without with only being having English and hands and fingers and gesturing and accents that I learned.
So what was the main thing you did in India?
Well, basically, when you go to the central government, India doesn't have a problem. When you go to the community, India has a big problem. So I decided that if I was going to identify the problem, I really had to start at the community level. So I went out to the villages and the towns, and the there are different levels of Indian culture. There's urban Indians. Most of the ones we see in Melbourne are the urban Indians. Then there are rural Indians who farm when there's anything to grow, and then there's the tribal Indians. So there's really three parts of the Indian culture. And I went out to the places where high prevalence HIV existed, in all the states where there was a high prevalence level. I spoke to people at the grassroots level. I also went to places where there was very little prevalence and talked about how they could keep it that way. And then I found myself standing on toes of people.
How did the people accept you?
Oh, the people were fine. First of all, they wanted to know, was I doing a PhD? That was the first question I got asked. Was I wanting to do a drug trial? That was another question I got asked. And there were a number of ways in which they worked out that I didn't have an ulterior motive for being there. And then they said, who's paying you to go? And when they found out I was coming at my own expense, and I was also sponsored by the INP Plus, which is the Indian Network for People Living with AIDS. And then I found out there were people of alternate genders living with HIV, and we started Nipasha Plus, and we started a group for positive women so that they weren't discriminated against as individuals. So there was a lot of networking and a lot of construction and capacity building at the community level that we were able to do.
Excellent. This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh.
This is a podcast from Joy 94.9, a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station. For more content, please go to our website at joy.org.au, or if you're in Melbourne, tune in to Joy 94.9.
This is On Driven with Alan and Hugh. Now, we've got a charity trivia night at the London Tavern on Friday the 26th of September. $25 per person, starts at 7:30. You can contact by email STANDCHEN, that's Dan Chen, at hotmail.com, or you can call Jerry Roberts on 041-301-6921.
And Archilesbica Australia and I Ragazzi, which is the Italian lesbian and the Italian gay groups, invite you to a traditional Italian sport, bocce, followed by scrumptious food and extras. It's on Saturday the 8th of November, so it's just a little way out yet, at the Veneto Club in Bolin. We'll try and announce that a little bit closer to the event as well, but if you need more details, either contact us here at Joy, or you can call Francis on 0412 868 438. That's on the 8th of November for a bocce.
If you're gay and long for the joys of parenthood, affordable surrogacy is now available. Gay Dads Victoria present a community forum for willing fathers to learn more about surrogacy and have all their questions answered. Surrogacy for gay men, Tuesday, September the 30th at 7 p.m. in Prahran. Visit gaydadsaustralia.com for details. And we have one other message. The last song I think it was really good, but this message says, sounds like a Christian rock song.
Are you getting the message yet, Hugh?
That's from Jason. Jason, don't you like my music or something? But it was Where My Heart Will Take Me. And it's a wonderful Russell Watson, who's actually English. He's not Scottish. So there we go.
As I said to you during the break, isn't that the same? Oops, I get daggers from him.
Yeah. The daggers were going far here. Let's go back to our guest, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, we were talking about the work you did in India. Let's go about your work in Australia now, because you've set up a home for overseas students, haven't you?
Well, yes, I guess I'd want to mention that thanks to ASRAN and VAC, I was skilled up to be able to go and use those skills overseas. And I also have to acknowledge the work that Babu helped me in terms of cultural understanding. He's my partner now here in Melbourne. But Babu is from Nepal, and internet communication meant I also had to go to Africa as well as Nepal and India and about 20 other countries in the Southeast Asian program. But when I opted to stay back here in 2005 after coming away from a conference in Nigeria, I decided what else would I do if I didn't travel. And there were a number of people I'd met along the way who had reached the end of education as it's known in the countries where they were, but still weren't educated enough but had lots of capacity to become better. So we set up what we called a scholarship program and funded visa applications, travel tickets, and set up a house. Initially there were two people in an apartment. There's now a bigger house with four or five bedrooms, housing eight students from four countries, not all of whom are gay, but primarily the emphasis is on giving people from the gender minorities an opportunity to come and study and to experience life in a way that's different to how it is in the countries where they were born.
So is it students who were maybe trying to come here that you bring across, or is it students who don't have the money to come here? Or
in other words, how do you select?
Oh, I think basically the students, half of the students were already here and they form part of the household to help the financial equilibrium. It's not a funded service, so it relies on everybody making a contribution for their room, and some of the students were already here and they said, we like this house, we don't want to, we'd like to live here. And so we made the house bigger so that people who were also studying, and there were other people who chose to be closer to the universities, so we have a number of properties, not all of them here. The main one is in Moonee Ponds, but there's another smaller property out in near Monash University in Caulfield, in Glenferrie, and that Glen Huntley, I think it's called. But they work quite independently of the house at Moonee Ponds. But yeah, it became a pretty exciting and dynamic project.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you spoke to me about a student who was in Nigeria or some African country or something you were trying to bring across.
Oh, this is a Ugandan. A young Ugandan student who was part of a family where Dad had had three wives at different times, and there were three step families. And this boy was gay and he lived with his dad, and everything worked fine while his dad was alive. But the moment his dad died, the wives came in to carve up the spoils, and that included the house in which he lived. And he was cast out into the street, and even to this day, he was sent to live with a stepsister who doesn't like him, and he eats the food that gets left over from the day before. He's a very nice person. He's got a lot of skills. He could do well in sporting, in education, and in computer science. He just no longer has anyone to go to bat for him. So he's the next person who's currently waiting for a COE, a confirmation of enrolment in one of our local universities, and we expect him to come in February next year.
So who will pay for him to come here?
We will pay, and there will be an account kept of how much it costs, and then, as in most cases, the students who come know how much was spent on their behalf. When they come, they certainly get opportunity to work. They can work 20 hours while they're studying, and they can work as many hours as they can. We do lots of job preparation, so people get into the job markets easily. We write references. We get them through the processes of visa extensions and bank accounts and TFN numbers and ABN numbers and all those other things that are necessary to be able to operate in Australia. And we've created a fairly interesting set of family members, all of whom have folks at home who ring up and who keep in touch and who love the fact that their kids are in a place where they're going to be fed, they've got somewhere to sleep, someone's going to be looking after them. We have some rules. If you're going to stay overnight, you have to ring up and say, so we don't worry about you. But people are free to come and go.
You're almost like a dad to them.
Yeah, I guess. I did a summary at one stage. There were 60 kids in 20 countries who call me dad. And that's embarrassing for my for my biological kids. They said, why does he need a card from us? He gets all these cards from everyone else. We don't need to bother. And I get no cards from my biological kids on Father's Day, but I get lots of cards from overseas.
Because I've actually met a couple of the young students who actually stay in this house in Moonee Ponds, and they call you their mentor.
Mentors, one of the things they call me. They usually don't call me late for breakfast because I'm always up first cleaning the kitchen. But I'm the taxi driver. I'm the person who listens to the gripes and the person who allays the fears. One of the things we did discover is a lot of people have diseases that in their own countries they would never be tested. We have a GP and we call ourselves the Mooney Tribe, and Mooney Health, Dr. Andrew, he looks after all the students, and we just go through a routine set of blood tests and whatever, and we found one of the boys had had a hyperactive thyroid, and it was affecting his health no end. But once it was diagnosed and work was done on curative properties, he has just transformed into a completely new person.
Does the doctor do this free? Or?
No, overseas medical health insurance covers a lot of stuff.
Right.
Some of the doctors are a bit more understanding than others, and Medibank Private have been very good to us. They pull out all the stops when it comes to making claims. They do what they can, and often there's a range of things that health insurance funds can do that go above and beyond. Some of the pathology clinics will sort of turn a blind eye, because these students, I mean, it's they pay full fare for everything.
Do you ever have any fundraisers or anything like that?
Well, we should always be having fundraising, but we have tax deductibility in the charity that sponsors the event. But fundraising is time-consuming, and there's never been a lot of emphasis on fundraising. It's something that we often talk about. Babu, my partner, is a chef. He works at a local five-star hotel now, and he has lots of skills in lots of cuisines. So, you know, there's a range of things that we could do, but we haven't got really into that.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, that's the show over, I'm afraid, Geoffrey, but thank you very, very much for coming in tonight. We have enjoyed talking to you and listening to you about the great work that you do. That's On Driven for another week. Our special thanks to Geoffrey. Coming up next on Joy is the team from the Sports Lounge. Thanks for joining us on Driven tonight. We'll be back again at the same time, 7 p.m. next Wednesday, with more insights into our GLBT multicultural community here in Australia and around the world.
And coming up next week will be just me with one of my pre-recorded Hong Kong interviews, and I get to speak to a popular 1980s canto pop musician and lyricist who with his band had a number of hits, number one hits in the 1980s in Hong Kong.
So sounds good.
Coming up next
sounds
week.
Sounds good. I would like to thank Nick on reception. Thank you, Nick. He's waving to us this week. Yep, he's listening. From Alan and myself, Hugh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.